Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 14th of August, recording at 9:10 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook at the various asset classes. But first, let's have a quick review of the week, and particularly regarding today, which was pivotal in some respects. Okay. In terms of stock markets, the trend has been generally steady, but often within ranges. The clearest exception on the downside has been China, which has extended its reaction and fell sharply today, more than reversing yesterday's small gains. Some of the commodity indices had continued to push into commodity exporting stock markets continued to push into new high ground, but China reined some of those in here today. The European stock markets have also been generally firm, mostly within ranges, however, we did see a little bit of profit taking today. Now, on Wall Street, we saw again a similar action, generally quite steady within narrow ranges, but today we saw a weaker tone generally in the U.S. markets, although they pared back those declines towards the close. So the S&P decline, for instance, moving to less than 1% here. Long-dated government bonds, they have been firmer recently, and showed some good gains today in the gilts and bunds. The U.S. Treasury gains were pegged back as Wall Street firmed a bit. The U.S. dollar has been generally soft this week, particularly against the commodity exporting country currencies, but the dollar bounced in here today. And particularly against those same currencies, the commodity-producing currencies against which it had been weak. The precious metals have been sort of quietly steady in here and in within ranging patterns this week, but they experienced some profit taking here today. And not least silver, which is down 30 cents as I speak. The grain and bean complex remains under pressure. And one of the bigger developments today, in percentage terms, I would think would be crude oil, which had a high early on today at 71.60. That's the NYMEX price. It's currently at 67.65. And industrial metals, which had been firm pretty much all week, encountered some profit taking here today. Most of the commodity markets are weaker today against background of that dollar rally. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, as far as stock markets are concerned, the evidence, all the technical evidence, has said this is a bull market. Now, I emphasize all the technical evidence. I know there are all sorts of qualms and fears out there regarding the fundamental data. Some of it's awful. There's still plenty of toxic waste around on the balance sheets. U.S. consumers, Western consumers generally, are severely constrained. There's been a big blow to sentiment, consumer sentiment, corporate sentiment. There's a lot of uncertainty around. But, you know, the raw numbers are getting a little bit better. And that has been led by China and India, surprise, surprise. And we have seen a very firm performance by Indonesia as well. So the Asia and subcontinent markets really, or economies, I should say, putting in the best performances. And they've put in some mighty decent stock market performances as well, as have all the export-based economies. and particularly the ones in developing countries. So technical evidence of a bull market is really irrefutable, I feel. And there are some markets around the world that aren't performing, but there are not very many of them. And Jordan, for instance, bumping along near the lows. I have no idea why. But it's probably the weakest stock market in terms of any recovery. It's seen no recovery today, just ranging sideways above its lows. But everywhere else, we have seen clear evidence of recovery, base formation development, breaks above the 200-day moving averages on completion of most of those base formations. Not all of them have been technically completed, in that some of the OECD markets in Europe have only pushed back up towards the October and November 2008 rally highs. And we could also classify the S&P in that group, because it hasn't broken decisively above the October and November rally highs that we had seen. But again, I don't want to belabor the point. It's good action technically. Short term, we're overbought, and we've been saying that for a while. Some of the lead indicators had, or lead markets rather, had turned downwards, notably China, which, when the rest of the world saw a pause and reaction really from May into early July, China did not. It kept pushing ahead. And then, of course, you might remember in late July we had that big downward key day reversal on China after the upward trend had steepened. So it's telegraphed its moves all along the way. And the China leash effect is now negative. And I think there may well be a delayed reaction for stock markets in response to China. China has pulled back to an interesting level, and we can see the Shanghai Composite Index approaching the 3,000 level, where that's at least a couple of hundred points above that. But we may see some psychological support there. But the important point to make is that China will need to see an upward dynamic, which would stand out very clearly on the charts to indicate to us that demand is coming back in and offsetting the profit-taking that we're seeing in that market right now. Owen and I have classified this move in China as a reversion to the mean in terms of the rising 200-day moving average. It may not touch that moving average. And the reversions to the mean that took place in the middle portion of China's last bull market did not. They just drew closer to the mean. But I'm trying to put things in perspective that I think this is no more than a correction in China. For other stock markets generally, we do have to bear in mind that markets are, or investors, I should say, will be contemplating mostly consciously and some subconsciously that we're passing through the anniversary of last year's meltdown. And I've said for some time that I felt that that might well cause some stock market jitters. That's nothing to be too worried about, but it's sufficient reason to be a little cautious in here right now. I certainly wouldn't want to be chasing any of these stock markets higher, and nor would I want to be bailing out following a downward reaction. You can be certain that some of the quite, I won't say euphoric, but some of the quite optimistic sentiment that we have seen in the marketplace recently and in commentary will or would be replaced by some anxiety concerns if we see a general sort of stock market reaction and consolidation. So I rate that risk as at least 50-50 over the next few months. But some of these markets, you know, they won't all do the same thing, or they're unlikely to. Some will just range, and we may have a few standouts that actually push higher. But I think the key point here is that over the next couple of months, and perhaps into October, that the risk of a setback is greater than the prospect of a significant additional surge on the upside for global stock markets. Okay, what about these long-dated government bonds? Well, they've steadied recently, as I mentioned, and there has been some, of course, continued buying from central banks in a number of countries and regions, such as Euroland, and we may well see more of that. I mean, the U.S. has said that it would continue to do this right through to October. I think that was a sign to some traders not to sell those short and to cover short positions in U.S. Treasury bond futures, and it may have encouraged a little bit of buying. The important point here is that long-dated yields do not offer good value for the longer term unless you feel that we are really going to see a major deflationary crunch. Now, some people feel that way. I do not. I think the quantitative easing has worked, and I think that the risks are of further asset inflation led by commodities and also stock markets, particularly the in-fashion commodities and stock markets, and possibly Chinese property over the next year or two or three. I do not think that we're going to see across the boards deflation. The best way to avoid deflation is not to let it happen to begin with. That's the premise on which Bernanke and the ECB and a number of other central banks, central bank governors have operated. And we will have a period where both inflation and deflation coexist. That's not at all unusual. As a matter of fact, that's normal more often than not. But the inflation, as I've already mentioned, will be in commodities, and more so as the global economy recovers. And it is on a recovery track right now. The debating points are really about how slow or how weak the recovery is and how sustainable. Well, the debate's always interesting, but nobody knows the answer to those questions. The trend is that things are getting less bad for the worst affected countries, and they're definitely getting better for the leaders in terms of GDP growth. And as I say, that will cause more commodity inflation as we go forward. And because monetary conditions still remain accommodative, and that's good news for stock markets, we should also see some inflationary pressures in, we should see some equity price inflation, I'll put it that way. Now, long-dated government bonds are worrying about, or investors in long-dated government bonds are worrying about that a bit. And we have a situation where long-dated yields are well above the lows that we had seen, let's say, last November, last March. And there's a general consensus that they do not offer good long-term value. I'm very much in that camp. As I said before, one would have to think that we were going to see a tough deflationary crunch. And I don't think we're going to see that. However, we're still getting some deflation in terms of wage pressures and also in terms of manufactured goods. And that's likely to remain the case for quite some time. Another area where we will see inflationary pressures, though, will be food prices. That's a natural follow-on from commodities that I have already mentioned. Now, I think that in terms of government bonds, I don't like the sector. I'm more interested in it as a lead indicator sometimes for other markets. Suffice it to say, central banks want to keep long-dated interest rates down. I think they can succeed in their efforts to keep them down for a while longer. What's a while? Over the medium term, quite possibly over the next few months, perhaps. But the long-term big trend for those long-dated government bond yields, I think, is upwards. When that actually occurs, I don't know, and neither does anyone else at this stage. From an investment perspective, there are far better prospects in the corporate bonds if you share my view that the global economy is moving in the direction of a recovery. Say the extent and breadth of that recovery, the strength of that recovery, these are all unknowns. But really, as time passes and as the recovery gradually takes hold in more countries, I think we will see the premium that we have, or the spread between the corporate bonds and the long-dated government bonds, I think we will see that narrow. So there's still some value there. I think the better value overall, though, is in equity markets. Now, the time I maintain to be worrying about stock markets is when the economic recovery is really quite clear. When we have a synchronized global economic recovery in which there is sufficient confidence, it's sufficiently robust, in other words, so that central banks signal clear intent to tighten monetary conditions. And we'll hear about that and see evidence of it, I think, before we get anything approaching the next meltdown in global stock markets. But that will be that change in monetary policy will spell the ending of the bull market that we are now enjoying in global stock markets. Again, bull markets, I've said it before, and it's not an original comment, but bull markets don't die of old age. They are assassinated by tighter monetary policy, invariably. Okay. What else to mention here? Currencies. Well, some dollar bulls are emerging, and we can understand why. The U.S. dollar has fallen back. It's retraced a lot of the gains that it saw in that sort of July-August through November period last year. So it's given up a lot of those gains, and therefore people are thinking in terms of recovery prospects for the dollar. I'm not a big dollar bear, but I'm biased to the bear side still, because I don't see the technical evidence that the dollar has turned. I don't think there's any good fundamental reason as to why the dollar should turn. And people who say, well, the U.S. economy will lead the recovery, I've been mystified by that comment. We haven't seen any evidence of that. So far, the U.S. economy is less bad than it was, but I don't think it's going to be leading Europe on the upside, for instance. And it certainly, obviously, hasn't led the Asian emerging markets or the Central and South American emerging markets higher. It hasn't led those economies in terms of their recoveries. So I generally feel that the dollar is likely to be soft. And I think that the U.S. government would really like that to be the case overall. And I'm talking now really mainly about the Treasury and also the Federal Reserve. So my feeling is that we still have some risks to the downside in the or with the U.S. dollar generally. And the stronger currencies, I think, will remain the ones that have been strong all along. And those are commodity currencies and Asian emerging market currencies. Now, what about these precious metals? Well, I've mentioned it so many times, and I won't dwell on it, but this tantalizing prospect of another approximately 18-month consolidation in the gold price, followed by another upside breakout commencing sometime in September. Well, that's what's happened on the last two occasions. there's no obvious fundamental reason why that's been the case. There's no reason why it needs to be more than coincidence, but certainly current action appears to be confirming to that script. But for that to unfold, we really need to see gold break above the $1,000 level and maintain that and extend that that move. I think that's in with certainly a better than 50-50 chance overall. What could delay it? Well, we could have some IMF gold sales. It's not beyond the bounds of possibilities that the U.S. could sell some of its gold, although there doesn't seem to be any major move to do so. I'm just thinking of outliers here in terms of possibilities. And we could have probably a greater risk is that stock market jitters hold back upside potential. But gold is slowly moving from a period of seasonal underperformance to a period of seasonal outperformance, mainly in the fourth quarter of this year and the first quarter of next year. If we do get an upside break, I think it could be quite strong. And I think platinum and silver would do even better. Meanwhile, they're still in ranges, and the action is fairly choppy overall. Industrial metals have done awfully well over the last 5 weeks in particular. They're a little bit overextended here in the short term, and we may well see some consolidation of those gains. But it looks to me as if this is very much a bull market. I posted a report today which showed the open interest increasing quite a bit in those. There's undoubtedly some speculative demand in the sector, and it's probably a little bit overheated in the short term, so due for some consolidations. But I think that there's no doubt that the trend is upwards, and I think some of these metals are still quite cheap overall. And I think that the supply and elasticity meets rising demand theme is back in business. Crude oil is not so robust as the industrial metals, but here we also have what I think is, we're in a ranging phase here right now, but the medium to longer term scope is to the upside in my view, in line with an improving global economy. And what has been a lull in the development of additional oil potential following the sharp recession and downturn in the price of crude oil that we saw last year. Now, agricultural commodities. It's very much a situation of weather concerns. In other words, the key variable with agricultural commodities is always going to be supply, not demand. Demand is rising overall for the most part in line with population growth, but when you get a recession, that does cut into that demand somewhat. But weather is the crucial variable, and we have seen conditions that have really pushed sugar higher, also orange juice, and also the Arabica coffee prices. And Owen's commented on that and produced a lot of information on that over the month, so you'll be familiar with that story. Those trends look to me like they're overheating, and we did see a shakeout in the sugar market. I think we saw a shakeout in the coffee market here as well today. The way I would respond to that is to say that what we've seen is an interruption of those accelerating upward trends, sufficient to suggest that we have seen peaks of at least near-term significance. It's impossible to be more precise than that in terms of medium to longer term, the medium to longer term outlook. That will depend more on future crop developments. And I think that's pretty much it. Grain and bean prices still quite soft. That's good news in terms of commodity price inflation at any rate. It doesn't, again, that more than offsets the rises that we have seen and problems caused by high sugar prices, coffee prices, and orange juice prices. The grain markets are more crucial in terms of overall food, global food prices, and also animal feed. So I think that's pretty much covered all the points that I wanted to make in this broadcast, except to say I've been very touched and I'm very appreciative of all the lovely inspirational messages that I have received prior to completing this run of audios and comments of the day for me. I'll be here on Monday and Tuesday, and then take a few days off prior to my operation on the 26th. And the well wishes that have sent through, well, if they count for anything, and they count a lot in terms of goodwill, as far as I'm concerned, I appreciate them very, very much, and I'm sure that they will help me through to a full recovery, which is what I look forward to. I will obviously be off in terms of full-time work for several weeks. I don't know precisely how long, but I will be following events very, very closely, and out of interest from home, and an office replicating most of what I have here. Everything that I have here, except for the Bloomberg terminals, will be set up for me at home. Is in the process of being set up for me at home. So that I will be able to assist Owen in his efforts, checking reports, feeding through reports, making the occasional small contribution initially. I may well be I will be commenting on any changes in my own personal portfolio, and I'll work my way back in first on a part-time basis, before I resume fully. But I look forward very much to a full recovery and to resume both a very active analytical and also physically active active life. It's, I think, no secret that this condition, which is really just a matter of the blood vessels leading to my heart. My heart is fine, it's strong, It's been well trained over many, many years. It hasn't been abused. But I happen to be a rather efficient producer of LDL cholesterol. And so those arteries that carry oxygen to the heart are really compromised to a point now where it has cut back on my energy a lot. And I have to be very, very careful physically in the run-up to this operation. So I'm just looking forward to getting that out of the way, recovering, and being... back here playing the active role that I do in the service, and also having an active life in every other respect. Meanwhile, all the very best to all of you. Have a splendid weekend.